Talk Shoe. Recorded live.
Hello, everyone. This is Carl Shinneman, Director of Legal Analytics and Review at Juranov, and welcome to another edition of ESI Bytes, where we offer information from national speakers on electronic discovery at a price everyone can afford, which is free, and available whenever they're interested in listening to it, which is whenever you want to download it onto your iPod, MP3, iPad, whatever you want to store it on and listen to it on. Today I'm joined by Charles Cohen, who's a partner in New York City with Hughes Hubbard and Reed. Charles and I are going to be talking about the increasing challenges associated with growing legal holds at companies and legacy data. Charlie's a co-chair of the Hughes Hubbard and Reed's eDiscovery Group and is based in New York City. His practice focuses are litigation, including products liability, antitrust involving intellectual property, and general commercial litigation, with experience in state and federal courts, arbitrations, and congressional and DOJ investigations. He also focuses on electronic discovery and information management in litigation and non-litigation settings. Charles is ranked by Euromoney's Guide as one of the world's leading product liability lawyers, 2009-2010, and ranked by Chambers USA, 2009-2010, as one of the top product liability lawyers in the United States. He's the chair of the New Jersey Defense Association Products Liability Committee, a member of the Defense Research Institute eDiscovery Committee, and a member of Lawyers for Civil Justice eDiscovery Committee. He's a frequent writer and speaker with, I counted, almost 20 articles and national presentations on eDiscovery in the last 4 years, and like me, cut his teeth in the pharmaceutical world of eDiscovery, including work in the Vioxx litigation. What I also like about Charles is he's the first guest I've had on the show who actually litigated against me back in 96-97 in the Farm War litigation, and although I was buried in documents doing single word searches on summation, which I guess qualifies as building the pyramids in eDiscovery, and Charles was a first and second year associate on the other side of the case, so the fact that we saw each other in court really only meant we were both sitting there watching other lawyers argue the case. But I think it's safe to say that we've both developed far more expertise from those early days. And, Charlie, it's great to have you on the show.
Great. Thanks very much.
Okay. So, first of all, I always like to ask new guests about how you got involved in electronic discovery. So what's your story?
Well, I've always been interested in computers. In fact, my dad bought us our first computer in 1978. It was an Ohio Scientific Challenger C28P, and it was huge. And my first program, believe it or not, is on punched paper tape for a teletype. And then once I started my legal career, as you mentioned, the Farm War litigation was one of the first I ever worked on. And we had some very rudimentary search techniques and software available there. And then the next one I did was the breast implant coverage litigation, which was really, I think, an amazing litigation for the early days of eDiscovery, because just thousands and thousands and thousands of boxes worth of paper had been scanned onto CDs, and we were using CD jukeboxes and really trying to leverage search technology way back then to find the information that we wanted. Obviously, it's a lot better today.
Yeah, I remember everyone thought that was going to be the answer. So go on with your story, because it obviously wasn't.
the funny thing about that is I did once have to go to the National Depository in Cincinnati, which was just like that room in Raiders of the Lost Ark, where you just saw box after box after box, because they weren't able to digitize some of the physical specimens, which I had to look at. But that was truly amazing. But then, of course, the big case earlier on in my career was Vioxx, and we just have had an amazing experience in that case. It was one of the largest mass torts, product liability mass torts ever, and that took up a lot of time.
Yep. So let's talk next about the growing problem of ESI that large companies face. And first of all, would you care to define legacy data and then talk a little bit about the problem?
Sure. Well, legacy data is usually defined as information stored in a format or on a system that's either no longer being used or that makes it difficult or impossible to retrieve the information. And this can come up in a number of different ways. It could be stored on various forms of media that we don't use anymore. If we think back over the last two decades, all of the different forms of media that we've had, from things like I mentioned, the punch paper tape for a teletype, to cassette tapes, to 8-inch floppy disks, to 5 1/4-inch floppy disks, to the 3 1/2s, to CDs and DVDs. And when you see old checklists on eDiscovery checklist for what you're supposed to ask people at depositions, and you ask them about zip drives and jazz drives, and I bet a lot of people haven't even ever seen these things, and they just come and go. And if you have information on some of these old media and you don't have something that you can use to read it, then that's certainly legacy data. But it could also be from various computer programs that you just no longer use, computer programs that maybe you had to pay an annual fee for, and for business reasons you decided it wasn't worth upgrading, but you still have all the data on some sort of server, you just can't really access it anymore. And then finally, one other thing I just wanted to point out is that companies that acquire other companies often have a big legacy data problem, not only from the types of things we've been discussing, but just from business lines that maybe they're not continuing, and they just have all of this data that they have no business interest in maintaining or spending any money to upgrade, and yet they have it. And so it becomes subject to any legal holes that they might have and other legal requirements.
So what do you see as the challenges associated with legacy data? And let's add old legal holes to that mix, which are in place and maybe expire.
Well, the biggest problem with legacy data is that it's expensive and time-consuming to figure out what you have. Usually, legacy data kind of rears its ugly head at the last possible moment. If you're looking for something in a litigation, somebody suddenly remembers, oh, wait a minute, we used to have the such-and-such system, and I think I still have that server, or I still have some old tapes or some old disks. They might be in this room, and then they open up a box, and your jaw drops to the floor, and you're like, oh, my goodness, what are we going to do with this now? But it also comes up just in day-to-day business activities as the companies are constantly evolving, and records management people have a limited budget, a limited amount of people that can do the job. They have to maintain all of the active data, and it's very easy for data to turn from, to use the current parlance, from reasonably accessible into some legacy data that becomes much less reasonably accessible. And in order to try and prevent that is really, really difficult.
So why can't we just get rid of more data, have a shred day, as we were joking beforehand, or is it more complicated than that?
Well, I think everybody would love to just do a shred day, but there are a couple
January
of issues
2nd,
with that.
January 2nd, with donut in hand.
And a very nice sign that says, don't forget, tomorrow is shred day. But ever since Enron and some other famous cases, those days are pretty much now synonymous with improper disposals of data, even if you never intended it to be improper in the first place. And so I do think that that you're right. We are trying to find ways to counsel our clients to be able to dispose of data when they can. But we're finding that when you have large companies that have litigation on many of their products or many of their lines of business, it becomes difficult, especially in today's environment in which legal holds are broad, in which plaintiffs can assert very broad claims on some pretty easy pleading standards, even though there's some new, obviously, Supreme Court, the Twickball cases trying to do a little bit in that regard. But it becomes very difficult for somebody to stand up and say, I think we can actually dispose of this data. That problem becomes compounded when we're talking about legacy data, because the effort it takes to find out what you actually have might not be worth the time and money, and you might just keep it in a box. And all that means, though, is that in the next year or two, if you do have litigation, now you have that box you have to deal with.
Do you think there are legal hurdles associated with getting rid of data, or are more of the hurdles centered around the political challenges in companies of who does what with data management between the IT group, records managers, legal, and business people?
I think we have two very different areas. I definitely think the legal hold aspect is a big problem, in that if the scope of a hold is what can be relevant to a litigation, and you have broadly pleaded complaints and many of them, the scope of what you have to hold can just be immense. And so one of the things I think we'll talk a little bit later is about whether or not we should actually be trying to take steps to change those rules. And to give you a preview, I think we should. But there are also just a tremendous number of practical issues that folks who aren't in the trenches at big companies just might not really have the exposure to, which is just the constant innovation and the constant upgrading of systems. I mean, just think of your Windows operating system. They're not all backwards compatible. And if you move from one operating system to another, you've probably done a podcast on the issues associated with that kind of switch of data from one format to another. And can you ever actually ensure 100% of data being migrated from the old system to the new? But just think about when you have a limited budget and the business groups are telling you they don't care about legacy system A, B, or C, how is it that you're going to be able to actually devote a lot of time, effort, and money to actually figure out what's there, convert it into some new system, and keep it so that it can be held for legal requirements? And that just becomes a tremendous issue. I think we're taking a step in the right direction with the difference between reasonably accessible information and non-reasonably accessible information that was put into the recent federal rules, which are becoming less recent every time we have one of these discussions. But even so, it's still up to every judge to decide whether or not that judge thinks that it was not reasonably accessible, or whether they say, you know, you had this data, if you, you really needed to have upgraded it and kept it in a format that would make it accessible to plaintiffs, and it was your own fault because you chose this method to store data. And I've seen sentiment like that in a number of cases from another number of judges. And in the case where you're just constantly evolving and you're having constant innovation and you're constantly upgrading and improving and changing your systems, that becomes a real problem for corporations.
Okay. So let's tackle the legal problem first. Do you think you mentioned you thought maybe the federal rule should be amended to make it easier to get rid of data? And I actually know people that are working on that exact proposition through the rules committee, or they're trying to right now. But what are your thoughts?
Well, absolutely. And the Duke conference had preservation as one of its key topics discussed there. And one of the interesting things that I know is being discussed in connection with amending the federal rules is whether or not an amendment to the federal rules can have effect with respect to state court litigation. One of the things that we often forget is that even though there's a tremendous amount of civil litigation in the federal courts, there's a tremendous more amount in the state courts. And if we're going to get a solution that will work for a large company, it really needs to be a solution that works across the country in every single jurisdiction, or else there's always the fear that you need to take whatever steps to comply with the most problematic or most difficult jurisdiction, or else you could spend all this time, money, and effort trying to organize yourself for something that might work in 40% of your litigation, and yet in 60% of your litigation, all that time, money, and effort might have just been wasted. But that said, I think we absolutely need to address preservation. We need to decide how much people really need to preserve, when they need to preserve it, and when they can be reasonably sure that they can dispose of information. And in that regard, I'll just give you one example of the burden that preservation can really put on companies. If you think about the trigger for a preservation obligation, when litigation is reasonably anticipated, oftentimes this is triggered by a detailed, credible threat of litigation from an adversary, who then might not file suit for the entire period that's open by an applicable statute of limitations. And let's say that time period is 6 years. And so you're holding information for 6 years. And yet every year, maybe you get another one of these letters, or maybe you have actual other litigation. And so the amount of data that you're holding just keeps going up and up and up. And while people might say, storage is cheap, there's all sorts of costs that are associated with storing data, all sorts of costs with making people not able to keep their own personal stores of data in a reasonable size. It interferes with the business. It makes us less competitive, less efficient. And so I really do think that preservation is a topic we need to address, and we need to address in every aspect, from scope to trigger, and possibly also tackle not only from preservation as its own topic, but bring in things like pleading standards and other types of areas that we can tighten up to try and make it easier for us to just conduct general business day in, day out, still provide the material critical information that our our system of justice requires be available for litigation, but also let companies hire workers and make money and continue to make this country a great one.
Yeah, you mentioned the litigation hold issue, and without a case even be filed, I've always thought, and this is a scary proposition given the fact I don't think there's any, I know there's no case law on it, but I don't believe if you have a litigation hold in effect that it should be presumed that that data should be applicable to other litigation, and this is the reason why. Litigation holds are done broadly, okay? A lot of times you're still trying to figure out through search terms or concept searching what the hell you've just grabbed. So you don't really know unless you actually have processed it and then started to actually look at it. A lot of times the stuff you've put off onto the side that you've held on for a rainy day, you really don't know what's there. You just don't think it's relevant to the case. To then be worried that something's in that bucket that might resolve to a case is outside of your active data, and it gives future plaintiffs an unfair advantage because they've essentially been able to piggyback off of some other litigation hold.
And that is so particularly acute today. If you really think about it,
that's your chart. You want to talk about your chart, which I think is a great one.
Well, I have a chart that I use in PowerPoint presentations that I give. That's a bar chart, and the bar is constantly going up from year to year. And the title is, "I hope this shows our profits." Unfortunately, what it actually shows is the volume of data that you're sitting on and that you might need to look at every time you get a new litigation and have to put something on hold, and then even worse, have to review it and possibly produce it when, we all know in another slide that I do that if you think of an upside-down pyramid, you might preserve millions and millions and millions and millions of pages. You might review fewer millions or hundreds of thousands. You might produce hundreds of thousands or tens of thousands. You might actually use at deposition hundreds or maybe in the low thousands. And at trial, it's very unlikely you're ever going to see more than 100 documents. And so to get down from the very broad top of the upside down pyramid all the way down to the bottom is just an incredibly expensive proposition. And, the federal rules were really written when we were in an industrial age, and now we're in an information age. And so the volume of information is just so completely unknown to the people who are writing the rules in the first place. It's really the reason why I do think that the rules need to be changed to take into account basically that we're in a new age of business, a new age and a new economy. And just think of the number of technological advances we've made in the last few years with respect to information, and then think that in 10 or 15 years, people will be looking back on, wow, all that stuff you did in 2011, how quaint, you used all of those systems, none of which we're going to use anymore.
Yeah, no, that's true. So let's pretend we can get rid of the data and there aren't legal issues. Do you think the technology is improving to make data remediation more plausible?
I think that improving technology is the classic example of an arms race, because there's no doubt that that the technology today does make it easier to categorize up front and apply some time periods for retention time periods, and it does make it easier to get rid of certain types of information. At the same time, technology is constantly improving and advancing such that we're storing completely new types of information for which the technology hasn't caught up from the legal side about how to hold it and how to produce it. And so just think today, we're still talking about cases that are predominantly involving email, but so much of the communication these days is being done in social media, either external or now internal at companies, in wikis and other sorts of collaborative software environments.
SharePoint and all that stuff.
Absolutely. And then I still think that, when you look at the younger generation today and my kids, they're beginning to use a language that doesn't look like English at all. And I predict that some of that's going to show up in corporate America in the next 10 years. And so our whole questions about word searches and concept searches are going to have to take into account changes in linguistics.
Interesting. Yeah, well, I'm hoping our kids get to corporate America for those of us paying college tuitions right now. But anyway, well, those are good points. Do you think companies will pay to get rid of data unless they're faced with litigation?
I do. I think that you won't see companies that kind of brand themselves like my favorite software product, the Evidence Eliminator. And
the Data Garbage Man.
That's
coming
right.
This week.
They're absolutely coming. I don't think you'll see that. But I think you're already seeing it. I think a lot of the management consulting firms and the accounting firms who have consulting arms are actively consulting companies on how to manage their data and how to dispose of data that when they can. I know we have done a number of engagements for our clients where we have worked with them to try and identify stores of data that are not subject to any legal hold or any other requirements to be kept. And, companies that can try and clean up a bit, I think are. I still think there are limits to what, companies that are involved in frequent litigation can do. Which is why we need other kinds of reforms. But absolutely, I think this is going to be a growing business, and I think there'll be more, just like we said before, the technology is going to improve. There'll be more software packages out there. There'll be more hardware innovations to try and tackle the problem of getting rid of data when it's outlived its usefulness. But we just know that legacy data is not a problem that's going to be solved overnight, and I suspect that actually the problem is going to get even worse as the shelf life of current technology becomes shorter and shorter and shorter.
Well, I thought you were going to segue into Arthur Andersen when you threw out, accounting firms getting into the business. But anyway, last question I have is, given the challenges of getting rid of legacy ESI, do you think part of the solution is also putting more teeth into records management? Or are we, we joke about getting into periodic cleanup dates, even though we wouldn't call them shred days or stuff like that.
I do think that there's definitely an evolving understanding that really looking at the records that a company has and trying to do your best to have good records management hygiene will pay off, and it does really pay off for companies that get hit with a lot of litigation. The real problem is finding, if you're on a constant merry-go-round, when can you jump in and get data off it without it being subject to the legal hold in the next case? And, if you happen to have your largest litigation is maybe coordinated and is in an MDL, maybe we can start asking our MDL judges to let us have the opposite of preservation orders and start giving us destruction orders that we've already produced. All of the information in certain categories for this litigation, and give us permission to resume normal retention policies for some of that. We're going to have to start really being creative because the companies that are stuck on that merry-go-round desperately want to get off. And right now, with our current system, it's not easy. We try little by little, but that's why I think we're also going to need some additional support both on the rulemaking/legislative side and on the education side.
Yeah, I thought of one last question because it just strikes me. I see a lot of parallels with some of the things I've been doing with concept searching and predictive coding and talking to the judges. The big concern was, is it defensible? And I've heard that from hundreds and hundreds of lawyers, of course, because there's no real opinion out there and it's something of a black box. Although you can sample and do things like that to get more comfortable with the results, you still don't know what a judge is going to think. And, after talking now to about a dozen judges and showing demonstrations, Fatiola and Judge Grimm came out on the podcast last month and said, we'd love to write an opinion on this. So bringing it back into legacy data, do you think part of the fear of getting rid of it is I don't want to call it lack of guts, but it's the fear of a bad result when there's a real good argument of why companies should do it.
Absolutely, and I think that to characterize it in a different way, when you're faced with the possibility of extreme sanctions or something that can really affect your ability to prevail in a litigation, you absolutely have to take that into account, and you have to be conservative, and most companies are very conservative. And without some thought leadership in the judiciary yet having been able to write when can we dispose of data, it's going to be very difficult to really say, you know what, today I'm going to throw out this old legacy system just on my own, because someone's going to have to stand up, and you're going to be second-guessed. I mean, you're putting a target on your back, even if what you did was so obviously reasonable that 99,999 people out of 100,000 would agree with you. Do you want to take that step? Is it worth it to you to take that step? And, you know, we're all human, and the alternative might be, let's just shove it in a drawer and, you know, see if it ever comes up. And if it comes up, we'll mention it. And sure, it might cost even more money then, but it's a decision I can defer for today. And that's really unfair. People shouldn't be put in that situation. They should be able to have some guidance that says, you know, here's a situation where this is really old data and a business line that is not being pursued today, and we've already let a sufficient amount of time pass. We don't see any real litigation. And I'm a strong believer of saying not necessarily no litigation, because just think of the products field that I do a lot of work in. You know, really, if one person says, you know, this product injured me, and maybe they have a really weak case, should that trigger the same hold requirements as, say, an MDL where there's, 10,000 people suing and a lot of reputable scientists saying, yes, this really does hurt, even if you disagree with. But right now, there's very little judicial scholarship written on whether, the number of cases, the types of cases, what other reasonable steps did you take? You know, when can you just throw something out because it's obviously the right thing to do when our current cases say things like hold everything relevant to the litigation simply because litigation has been filed? And that's why I think we need to change in a number of different ways.
Yeah, the English are laughing at us, their system. But anyway, that's a different podcast. I'll have Chris Dale on that show. But anyway, hey, Charlie, thanks for joining us on the show. This has been a lot of fun, and it's always a pleasure to have you share your knowledge with us and our listeners, and hopefully we'll be able to do more shows with you later this year.
Absolutely.
To the listeners, if you've enjoyed this podcast, I'd encourage you to go to www.esibytes.com for a complete list of our show. You can also remember our show and website phonetically, as it sounds out as Easy Bytes of ESI information. So however you choose to remember us, come to ESI Bytes to learn more about eDiscovery before ESI bites you back. This is Carl Shinneman, Director of Legal Analytics and Review from Juranov, wishing you a nice day.